Hello and a very warm welcome to episode 3 of Turnkey in Trimmings. Welcome back to the podcast. David, welcome. How are you?
I'm absolutely fabulous. Thanks. How are you doing?
Very good. Thank you. Very good. Looking forward to an in-depth conversation about some things related to Contractors Direct and what we're doing here. We've had the first couple of episodes. We had a sort of a special edition, if you like, with Oliver from Workplace Maven coming in and talking about some of the research that's going out there around office design and everything. And today's episode, we thought we'd get into a little bit more of the reason for Contractors Direct existing, some of the problems that were in the marketplace beforehand. And I don't like using the word, you know, untrustworthy, but there have been issues in the past with contractors doing certain things, unscrupulous practices, where the end user has ended up paying the price, both financially and from, I suppose, a mental...
Emotionally.
Yeah, emotionally, exactly. And we wanted to dig into that just to share with people some of the things they can keep an eye out for, and then obviously why we exist as Contractors Direct and how we help to overcome some of those problems. So first port of call, I suppose, is what are some of the problems that people have encountered previously that led you, at the end of the day, to design Contractors Direct and put it into reality?
So first of all, I guess I'm going to caveat your introduction with it's not exclusively just to the UAE. This is a global issue and a global challenge. And a lot of the issues that we have addressed and we continue to address, they're very real. Mm. You know, they still exist and not enough people know the Contractors Direct exists. So we are trying to get out there as best and as much as we can so that people know that there is an outlook where they can find pre-qualified contractors. But the biggest or some of the issues of the problems that I guess that we're working through and trying to solve, there's a lot of contractors out there that are claiming to be able to do, you know, what the client needs them to do within the timelines and within the budgets. And they just cannot do it. And it's not necessarily the contractor's fault. It's the contractor's fault that they're agreeing to those timelines and those budgets. But often it's unrealistic budgets and timelines imposed by the client. So having sitting down around a table and having a discussion about, okay, this is what I want as an outcome. You tell me, Mr. Contractor, how long is it going to take and how much should I expect to pay? That's a very important conversation that just doesn't take place.
Just on that, why doesn't it take place? Because it sounds, you know, when you and I talk about it, we talk about our clients, it sounds like it should just be commonplace. Yeah. That why is that not just the number one thing that happens? And why is that the case?
I don't know. It's a really hostile process, you know, part of the process. You know, the clients will often feel like they've got to get a deal. They've got to get a deal. And you know, a lot of the time the deal comes in the form of a shorter timeline and, you know, spending under budget. Unfortunately, you and I know, and you know, a lot of people, previous clients and new clients, they know that if something is too good to be true, it almost always is. And, you know, trying to force the hand of a contractor to deliver against unrealistic timelines and deliver high quality, you know, output for what is essentially low budgets it's impossible to achieve. So what we wanted to do was essentially create a platform whereby, number one, we could provide the education piece to the clients. So understanding how long things take and how much they cost. There's a fit-out calculator on the homepage. And, you know, it's relatively detailed. It's accurate to within 5 to 10%, certainly from a cost perspective, because it was made up of over 400 previous BOQs and proposals. The only thing is, you know, my interpretation of low, medium, and high spec would be potentially different to the user's low, medium, high spec. But ultimately, the cost of the project is pretty much solid. We don't put the timelines on that calculator for the simple reason, depending on where the project is and what the project is, the timelines can vary vastly. You know, for example, a villa in a Nikhil community versus a villa in an Emar community. It can be the same square foot villa, same specifications, but it will take longer in a Nikhil community. So it's really difficult to put timelines on, but then that's why we call every client back. You know, we have that conversation. We help them understand not just what the timelines are, but why those timelines exist and help them understand that You know, you've got the tender process that you need to do. You can't just rush contractors into creating 3Ds and putting a price in. You've got the tender, then you've got the technical drawings, then you've got the authority approvals, then you've got the demolition, then the mobilization, or the mobilization's demolition, and then you've actually got the fit out works. So what we're striving to do is essentially set the record straight.
Mm-hmm.
You know, set the record straight for clients, and often we're giving them information that they don't want to hear. You know, how many times have we had clients at the end of the phone and they're saying, I've got to be in 3 months. You know, you're like, well, don't do the project then.
Yeah.
You know, or if you do, just paint the walls, put down some SPC flooring and do it next summer.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And setting the correct expectations, I think, is such a big part of what we do for both parties, because we know what the contractors need to do. We know we need to educate the client to help them understand you cannot force this square peg into a round hole as much as you really want to be in this time. And I only want to pay this. It's like reality says it's not going to happen.
Yeah.
And again, though, you know, if it can happen and it means that we're up against it and the contractors are, and we can do it, then it's a case of saying, okay, we can. But it's also being able to say, guys, this is just not physically possible.
Yeah.
You know, we can't bend time yet. We can't do these things. The reality is it's a 6-month project.
Yeah.
And if you can't handle that, then like you say, we need to redress everything. But at least let's have that conversation at the beginning of the process, not when you're halfway through expecting to be.
Yeah, and you can't live in it.
Yeah, and you think, right, well, this isn't where we were going. That's obviously what we're trying to do from a contractor's direct perspective. But how do we do that then with the way that we onboard, I suppose, our contractors? Because what we're doing is we're putting our name out there saying, look, if you're dealing with a contractor's direct contractor, then we effectively saying we're setting the bar a bit higher.
Mm.
You know, if somebody's on our platform, then they've had to go through a process to be on the platform. And, you know, I've heard you say this before, and it's definitely something that I buy into, is that what is acceptable, or what has been previously defined as acceptable quality in the UAE, is a relatively low bar. And when we are dealing with clients and contractors, we want to set the bar higher so that, you know, from your experience, there should be a higher quality and people should be held to that level. So can you just talk a little bit about how do we work on that from Contractors Direct in terms of getting the right kind of contractors onto the platform? What do they have to do in order to qualify?
Yeah, it's a brilliant question. So first of all, there's a whole slew of contractors that are in the market that will say, yes, we can do it.
Mm.
Very few will actually be able to do what it is that the client needs. And we made it our goal to find and identify those contractors who can versus those who can't. And so we needed to devise a very rigorous due diligence process. So it's broken into 3 phases. Number one is checking essentially the legalities. So do you have a trade license? Do you have the insurances? We'll meet the owners of the companies and just get a good understanding. Do you tick all of the initial boxes that allow you to be able to undertake the projects that come through our platform? The next stage is interviewing their previous clients. So essentially, we pose as a new potential client of those contractors, and we interview their previous clients only from the last 12 months. We can't go any further back than that because we want real world feedback on how they're performing now. And we ask that client to score the contractor on a scale of 1 to 10 for quality, cost, communication, customer service, and timely delivery. And we almost insist that each of those clients, we say, if there was one thing the contractor could improve on, what would it be? You know, and some of them say, oh, absolutely nothing. You know, they just want to get off the phone. You're like, well, if there was something, what would it be? No, honestly, absolutely nothing. But if you had to choose something, and then they come out with it, well, actually, the project manager changed 3 times during, and that was quite frustrating. So, you know, we make a note. And that's really important, that piece, because once we've done phase two and interviewed all of the previous clients, if the same thing keeps cropping up, it's feedback to that contractor, the owner of the contracting company. And then the third phase is going out to actually see and inspect a completed project. So one of the five people that we will speak to, we arrange to go and see that site. So when we go out and it's a completed site, what we're looking for is essentially, did the contractor install everything that the client paid for, including the brands and the model numbers? Because that is one very, very prominent or prolific way the contractors sign a job and make extra margin. So there's a fantastic place called Dragon Mart, right? So you can get almost any product from Dragon Mart from China that looks, a lot of the products are brilliant, by the way. But like, say for argument's sake, the flooring that we've got in here, so this is from, I think the brand is Shaw. So this oak plank and these carpets, Shaw is a reputable brand, good warranties, all the rest of it, sustainable. But if I was the client and I signed off on this product, you could go down to Dragon Mart and you could find a product that looks 99% like this, you know, 95 to 99% like this, but it is 30 to 40% cheaper. And that's what happens. So we're checking to make sure that what the client has paid for has been installed, but also we're looking at workmanship.
Yeah.
You know, there's some really, really simple fundamentals that we look out for. So if you've got a long run of gypsum ceiling, is it flat or are there undulations where the boards meet? If you've got long runs of LED spots, are they in a straight line? Like, you know, this is building 101, right? Floor boxes, are the floor boxes in the right locations? When you open the doors, do they scrape on the floor? So, you know, it sounds simple, but going back to what you were saying earlier, it seems that in the UAE, a lot of people are ecstatic with mediocre because the quality bar was so low. And what we wanted to do was not just give our clients an outlet for connecting with pre-vetted and high-quality contractors, but we actually wanted to raise the quality standards in general. And one thing I think is important to mention is two out of three companies that actually go through the due diligence process fail. But we don't just cut them loose and say, you know, sayonara.
Thanks very much.
Yeah, exactly. We give them detailed feedback on where they fell down. And they are the points that they need to work on. And then they can reapply in 6 months. So there's two contractors that failed in 2024. They pulled up their socks. They addressed all of the issues. Not all, there was only two, but you know, they addressed the issues where they fell down. They reached back out to us, yeah, in January and February, and they're now both working with us. Yeah. You know, and they're doing a fantastic job. But until someone highlights the areas where they are falling down based on our quality standards, they will just keep doing what they're doing, thinking it's okay. And it might be for their standards.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, unfortunately, that's the case. And it's also, I think, just to go back to something you said there, a lot of people, whether it's residential or commercial, the project might be the first time they're doing things. So, you know, you said you've been in the industry for quite a long time, building 101, but to the unknown, you're thinking, oh, that looks great.
Yeah,
until somebody goes, yeah, but look at it. It's a zigzag. And you're kind of like, is it not supposed to be?
Because yeah.
I like the look of it, but you're like, no, it's not supposed to look like that at all. That's terrible.
Oh, exactly.
And a big part of that education piece is to help people understand what they're actually looking at. You know, yeah. You don't know what we don't know, right? And so until somebody comes along and says, I don't think you should accept that, that people will just continue to accept it as well. Looks all right to me, to my untrained eye. It seems okay, but then later on down the line when things start going wrong, that's usually when they come back and say, is it supposed to do this?
Yeah.
Like, no, it was never supposed to do this.
And now you're out of your defects liability warranty, so you're going to have to pay to get it fixed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not happy.
No, absolutely not.
Not happy at all.
But it's definitely, I mean, it's a work in progress, right? You know, we've got, I think we're just over 100 registered contractors on the platform now. I mean, that covers interior design, architecture, fit out, turnkey, so design and build, IT, you know, it's the whole spectrum. But just to get those 100, we carried out due diligence on over 300.
Yeah.
You know, and even the companies that make it through, you know, you're only as good as your last project. We've actually had to say goodbye to two companies this year as well.
Yeah.
Which isn't nice. You know, no. But it's, again, we got quality standards we need to adhere to, and people aren't using the contractor's direct website thinking, oh, maybe, you know, maybe I'll get a good job. Like they use it because they know they're going to get a good job.
Definitely. I think it is worth it, you know, just focusing on that, that we have that rating level for the contractors, and that we did have, you know, over the winter period that we had our Santa's naughty list.
Yeah.
And yes, you know, it's legit. We are always looking to get feedback from both sides to say, guys, you know, we can't keep doing business with you if you're not able to listen to the constructive feedback, which again, it's been mitigated. It's not just the client said, oh, this was terrible. So no, there's bits there that are unrealistic from that side, but here are those points that you need to improve upon. Otherwise, we can't keep going there. And that's a big part of what I believe Contractors Direct is doing, is to provide that peace of mind. Mm. To say, no, this isn't just a one and done kind of thing. We want you to have an extremely high level of professionalism and of end result at the end of the day. And as you said there, just to lift up the standard across the board. And so this, said it before, it's the tide that lifts all boats, right?
Yeah.
That as we try and do this, everybody gets the benefit from it, because that standard comes up, and then what people can expect to have done within their residential, their commercial, their retail outlet is of a certain standard, where they, even as an, you know, air quotes, untrained eye, they're going, this looks awesome.
Yeah.
It looks really good.
Yeah,
it looks how it's supposed to be, because there's been a bit of education gone in there as well.
Absolutely. Well, it's kind of like if your first car, if you learn to drive in a C-Class Mercedes, that's the benchmark.
Yeah.
You know, if you learn to drive in a 1.3...
Mini Metro?
It is, yeah. That's what I was going to say. That's the benchmark, right? And it's kind of like, it's the same, you know, it's the same journey, but very, very different quality and comfort levels. And
definitely.
We're trying to, and I think we are succeeding, you know, we're trying to make sure that everybody gets a Mercedes product, but maybe not for Mercedes money.
Yeah, as much as possible. And I think it's also important to say there, sometimes we have to also help a client understand that as much as they want the Mercedes product, their budget doesn't quite allow for
it. Yeah, sure.
And the reality of, yes, that is a great goal, but if this is legitimate where the budget is, then we need to do some working around that so that you can have something that looks that way, but isn't, you know, on that budget side of things. And I think that's, you know, with the calculator and everything, people go, oh, okay, that's more than I thought it was going to be. And understanding, okay, coming back to your point of what is low, what is medium, what is luxury spec, is actually going into the details then and say, okay, well, this is why it costs this much if you just lower it down to here. But that doesn't mean the reduction in quality, it just means a different set of brands.
Yeah.
Okay, we're not buying a Mercedes, you're buying a, you know, a Toyota at this point. Extremely reliable, doesn't go wrong, and is going to look absolutely brilliant. But that's where you're at, Mr. Client, and helping them understand that from the outset and setting their expectations correctly.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, that's usually the major issue, I think, isn't it? That expectations were miles and miles apart. Well, I'm expecting this. The contractor's like, well, you're paying for this.
Yeah,
100%. I'm not sure how I can get there.
Yeah. And it's a tough one to navigate. I think one of the biggest challenges that we often face is when the client is engaging with contractors before they've spoken to us.
Mm.
Because let's say, for argument's sake, and we had it recently, a client comes to us, they say, look, I'm already speaking to three companies, I just need another two. And, you know, if we're doing our job correctly, it's like, okay, well, how did you find these other three companies? Well, one was a Google search, two were recommended by the real estate broker. Okay, no problem. And what due diligence have you carried out on these three? Do what? Due diligence. Yeah. Have you interviewed their previous clients? Have you been to see their work? How old is the company? Have you inspected their facility? You know, there's so many things that we do to make sure that the contractors are good. And also, do you have comparable projects that have been successfully delivered that are similar or the same as what I'm asking you to do? And when I was talking to them about their budget, you know, it was, if memory serves me correctly, it was 5,000 square feet. And it was a full retrofit. And I said, you need to be able, you know, you need to be prepared to spend between 1.2 and 1.5. And she said, oh, well, I've already got a quote for 600,000. I said, oh, have you? Okay, let's...
I have a look at
this. Yeah, do you mind sharing that with me? No, I'm not going to share it with you, you know? And it's like, okay, well, look, if you're going to a point based on cost without carrying out any due diligence or risk assessments, there's no point in me recommending another two, because I'm telling you they're going to be between 1.2 and 1.5, depending on specifications that you control. if you're still going to go with the 600,000, it's a waste of their time. It's going to be a waste of our time. And yeah, and ultimately, we didn't end up recommending contractors because, you know, that was the mental benchmark for the lady. She was like, well, if they can't beat 600,000, no, they definitely can't. So, you know, these are the risks. We've talked about it now. I'll send you an email just highlighting all the reasons and the things that I would recommend that you do to, you know, have be able to unearth the risks, you know, the potential minefield. She will call me back.
I was just about to say how often this happens where, you know, to be honest and open and transparent means that we lose business from that side of things. But it's also this difference between the right kind of business and the wrong kind of business. But then how many times, 6 months, 12 months later, there's that knock on the door, that phone call, and you're like, oh, hi, spoke to you about 12 months ago.
Yeah.
It's all gone wrong.
100%. But Jenny had a call last week from that lady in Jumeirah Park. So all of our, you know, so she reached out, she said, I want five companies. So five companies quoted, and they were in the ballpark of kind of like 900 to 1.1. It was slightly different interpretations of design and spec and everything else. And there was a company that was recommended by the real estate broker who came in, you know, well under 800. In fact, I think it was closer to 700. Fully detailed BOQ, and obviously we know what percentages the contractors work to, and so even the prices that were submitted by our contractors, by the time you remove their margin, it still wasn't down to the price that she had received from this other company. I was like, are they doing it at cost, or are they planning to go to Dragon Mart after the client has, you know, signed all the material specs, and anyway, so that was actually in December.
Right.
That you know, the lead came through and all the rest of it. And she reached back out to Jenny last week. She was like, if I had to engage with one of the five companies, you know, which one should it be? I was like, why? What happened? And, you know, oh, sugar, they've paid, I think, 40 or 50% and only 20% of the work has been done. And now nobody's turning up at site.
Yeah.
You know, so which is, it's sad. Residential in particular is really tough because there is often a finite amount of money.
Yeah.
You know, it's, I only have X and I can't exceed X. And, you know, contractors, the less trustworthy contractors would be like, oh yeah, no, I can do it for that budget. Knowing that they're either going to cut corners or that they just simply can't deliver for that budget, but they want to get the 20, 30% down payment to finish that project, to get that payment to start this project. And it just becomes an absolute disaster. And there's a fine line. I think I'd say that the most difficult projects to navigate are those between 200,000 and 400,000 dirhams. Mm. Because if a contractor defaults and you've got to go to court, it's going to cost almost as much as the project to get that contractor to the point where the court rules in your favor, but then the contractor can actually pay you in installments.
Mm.
You know, it doesn't solve the issue. You end up paying twice. You're better off go to a reputable source, pick a reputable contractor, make sure someone is there to review the BOQs, make sure it's complete, cross-check and benchmark all of the prices to make sure that they are fair and accurate, and negotiate the best payment terms that are fair for both parties.
Yeah. I mean, realistically, how often does that happen? Because, you know, just shout out to the British Chamber of Commerce, went to one of their speed networking gigs, and with the 50 people that were in there, two of them said, I wish I'd known about you 2 years ago.
Yeah.
And because they both had horror stories of contractors. How often is it happening, realistically?
Every day.
Really?
Every day. So we, even despite our best efforts with, you know, our Google advertising and our search engine optimization pushes, and obviously it will soon change with the white label. But we still have less than 0.1% of the market share, which means that there is 99.9% of people that are left to their own devices to find contractors that may or may not be qualified and good enough to do the project. And unless the contract terms are fair on both sides, so if a contractor says, yes, I can deliver this lump sum, it's their responsibility to deliver it by this date. If there's penalties in place, then the client should be remunerated for every day that the project goes over as, you know, a compensation. But, you know, if you have a look at the projects that we receive through the platform, I don't know what the exact percentage is, but I'd say at least one or two out of every 20 are rescues.
Rescues, yeah.
You know, and it's... And that's just by pure luck that they went to Google because they were at their wits' ends and typed in, you know, fit out contractors, reputable fit out contractors to buy or something along those lines. And then we, you know, we pop up. But it's a lot. And, you know, people are hemorrhaging money. And, you know, we've seen it. Lives are being ruined. You know, there's villas that are partly renovated. No one can live in it because it's not habitable and they don't have the money to be able to finish it. And the contract has disappeared. It's tough.
It is. And like I say, unfortunately happening way more than people would perhaps A, like to admit, and B, you know, accept is happening in and around the communities that they live in.
Yeah.
From that side of things. But on the positive side, we have a lot of clients coming through our platform. They end up utilizing our services. Are there any sort of standout ones? You've alluded to a couple of the rescue projects, the issues that we've gone, but let's focus on the positive.
Yeah, let's. Yeah, great.
Are there one key residential or commercial project that came through us and it was just a resounding success for client, for contractor, and for us?
Yeah. The one that stands out the most, we did a bank in DIFC. So they had reached out to us, I want to say February or March last year. And this wasn't their first rodeo. This was, I think, the third time that they had, you know, done an office renovation in DIFC for their company. And so they said, you know, we've got 10 months and we've got $200 a square foot. And I was like, okay, so where did you get the 10 months from? And where did you get the $200 a square foot from? Well, historically, you know, this is how long it's taken and this is what the process was. And historically, this is what we spent last time. And I was like, oh my word, that like both of them are insane. Like it was sizable, but it wasn't huge. And so, I thought, okay, there may be merit to that. Let's just ask a few questions. What's your decision-making process like? You know, what's your vendor registration and onboarding process like? You know, how long does it normally take once you receive all the information to be able to get approval internally? Because it's a big bank in Asia. And I said, look, you know, I'm not going to blow my own trumpet here or overcommit, but 10 months and $2 million is way more than what I think you need. I said, keep it there because, you know, we'll definitely overperform. I said, but if we do this correctly and you can make decisions as quickly as you say you can, I'm willing to hedge my bets and say that we will get this done in 6 months. And we will get this done in $150 a square foot or less, unless there is something like you need a vault, which apparently you don't, or, you know, there's something that we haven't discussed that will come up later. And that project, so their budget was originally about $4.5 million. We got the project completely done, including IT and all the rest of it, for about $3.5 million. So they were $1 million better off. And the other thing was they had 10 months as their timeline. It was all done in 7.
Wow.
So that was like a major pat on the back for our team and a major pat on the back for the contracting team. The sad thing was is that it remained vacant for 2 months, you know.
It's a rush.
But you know, it wasn't even rushed. Yeah. It wasn't even rushed. It was just a fast-paced, you know, a tremendously well-planned and executed project. But because they had it in their mind that it was going to be 10 months, even though once the contractor presented their program said that it was going to be finished in September, they're like, well, we're not going to move until November anyway. So that was the first thing. The other one is, so for residential, I would say, so that there was, or there is a syndicate of high net worth individuals. And they got in touch with us at the tail end of 2023. And they said, look, we got 20 million dirhams, you know, a syndicate of 4 people. Mm-hmm. We want to buy old stock in good locations, renovate them,
right,
and flip them.
Yep.
And we did 3 villas for them in 6 months. So naturally, we helped them spend the 20 million. But the first villa that we did for them was, what was the first? The first one was Jumeirah Islands, I want to say. And this is back when you could get a Jumeirah Islands villa for under 10 million here. So
good luck with that today.
Yeah, you got no chance, no chance. So that they secured the villa, and you know the modus operandi was to make sure that the design in general is as appealing to as many nationalities as possible. So it was luxury but not gaudy. It was semi Miami, you know, very light marbles, whites, quite minimalistic, but just absolutely stunning. But no marble, no natural stone anywhere. It looked like marble. It was actually from Porcelainers on Sheikhzad Road, huge, you know, format imitation stone tiles. They're stunning, absolutely stunning. Still expensive, comparatively. But we did the inside and the outside. So they bought the villa, I think, for 9. They spent 3.5 on it, and then they sold it for 20. And that whole project was done in about 8 months.
Yeah.
So, and then after that one, we did a Meadows villa for them. So that, in fact, the Meadows and the Jumeirah Islands both started at the same time. The Meadows one, I think they spent 8 to buy the property. We spent 2.5 on it because it already had a pool. We just had to retile it, do the landscape, and then all of the inside. That then sold for either 15 or 16,
right.
Like massive margins.
Yeah.
But the thing to remember is, had we used solid wood, natural stone, branded lights, all that kind of stuff, it still would have achieved the same sale price.
Mm.
So for these guys, what was important was maximizing the return.
Sure.
And a 20 million dirham villa is, if someone's got 20 million dirhams in their pocket, really what you want them to do is walk into a villa and believe that it is a high quality villa that's going to withstand the test of time. Both from a design perspective, but durability perspective. And I think we did really, really well and it, you know, certainly achieved that. So yeah, they're the two projects.
Yeah. No, that's brilliant. And again, I know we could sit here and talk about them for a long, long, long period of time, but we've both got other things that we've got to get on to.
Yeah, that's true.
So appreciate your time. Everybody that's tuned in, thank you very much for listening in. Don't forget to follow us on social media. Check out contractors.direct on the website to find out a bit more information. Our fit out cost calculator is on there for anyone that's looking at getting some sort of indication as to how much things are going to cost. David, thanks again for your time.
Baza, you've been amazing.
We'll see you all on the next episode. Thanks.
Thank you.